Hi there, this is Susie McMahon. I'm your host for the podcast Luxurious Journeys in Wellness. I am a professional travel advisor, Reiki practitioner, and I have a darn unique virtual book club. What we do each month is feature an author who will then meet with us live on Facebook, and I turn that Facebook Live audio into this podcast. Our very first featured author was Rebecca Dwight Brough, the historical fiction novelist. She wrote a wonderful story about Robert E. Smalls, an American hero from South Carolina, and the title of her novel was Trouble the Water. Rebecca was kind enough to recommend and refer me to another author for my next month's feature, and his name was Jeffrey Blunt, and he wrote the novel The Emancipation of Evan Walls, another fantastic novel. Each month, when we feature an author, they refer me to a future featured author, and we introduce them as a surprise guest, which always brings fun and joy to our book club members. Today's meeting is with author Ariel Lawton. She is a historical fiction novelist as well. And the book we chose to read was I Was Anastasia. This unique formatted storyline, timeline, will leave you questioning, do you really know what happened to Anastasia Romanoff? Make sure to stay tuned for our surprise guest today. Ariel will introduce us to another best-selling author. Stay tuned. Okay, it's spinning. All right, there we are. So, good evening, everybody. This is Susie McMahon with our virtual book club, and tonight our special guest is our featured author, Ariel Lawton, who wrote this a while back, I Was Anastasia, and I'm so excited to have you tonight. It is literally 5 p.m. I'm going to wait just a second. I see Shoshana has joined us. Just like a couple of minutes while everyone says, oh, it's time. When I say 5 o'clock, it's 5 o'clock Mountain Time. 7 p.m. East Coast time, and it is time for our virtual book club. Let's see, I see Karen coming in from Colorado. Janine is here from Austin, Texas. I'm glad you've joined us. And welcome, Ariel. How are you doing tonight in your neck of the woods, Nashville? Just let me know how the weather is down there.
The weather is crazy. Thank you for having me first. I love doing stuff like this, so I'm really glad to be here. But yeah, we got our first big snowstorm, probably not just of the year, but of the decade. Nashville, we call it the hole in the snow donut. It could snow 10 feet in every direction and it would miss Nashville entirely. But this time it didn't. We got ice and snow. So we are hunkered down and everything is closed and the kids are home and we're staying warm.
Well, I'm so glad that you're safe. I'm going to do a quick introduction to everyone that may be watching that may not have met Ariel when she was introduced to us by Susan Messner, correct?
Meisner,
sorry. Thank you for correcting me. That was several months back, and I can't remember what month that was, but I'm so glad we met. Ariel is a critically acclaimed author of historical fiction. Her books have been translated in numerous languages. She's the co-founder of SheReads.org, which I want to talk to you about a little bit, and lives in the rolling hills outside of Nashville, Tennessee, with her four sons, her husband. The Black Lab still around?
She passed in March, actually.
I'm so sorry. I should have asked you that before.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. She was 14, and it was good.
Do you have any other pets roaming around right now?
We don't. We are petless for the first time in 15 years. And part of me misses it. The rest of me is not sad to not have pet hair flying around the house all the time.
I know the feeling for that. That is crazy. Also, could you just do a quick introduction, backstory of I Was Anastasia for anyone who may be watching that has not read the book yet? And then I'll jump into the questions for tonight.
Absolutely, yes. I Was Anastasia is my third novel, actually. It was published in March of 2018, I believe. And it is a dual story and a dual timeline. One half of the story revolves around that of Anastasia Romanov during the last 18 months of her and her family's life. It is their time of imprisonment. The other half of the story is that of a woman who may or may not be Anna Anderson, who was long believed to be Anastasia Romanov's most famous imposter. And the story asks the central question of, did Anastasia survive the Russian Revolution or not? There are many people who believe that she did, and there are just as many who believe that she did not. And these two timelines go back and forth telling these two stories. But the unique thing about this particular book is that while Anastasia's timeline moves forward chronologically, Anna Anderson's moves backward in time. And they move together like this until they collide at a very specific moment at which you find out for sure whether or not Anastasia did in fact survive.
That is wonderful. I remember you giving us the explanation of the timeline, and I just can't imagine how challenging that was for an author, especially for those of us that don't know anything about writing. A lot of the questions that came to me ahead of time were around that concept. What made you decide or come up with the plan to do the dual stories and the opposing timelines? Did it just appear?
Great question, actually. It was sort of a two-part answer. The first part had to do just with me as an author. I was early in the process of writing the book, and I'd originally decided to write both timelines consecutively. And I was maybe 100 pages in, and I kept looking at the material and thinking, this isn't special. There's nothing different and exciting about it. And for me, if I'm going to commit a year and a half or 2 years of my life to a project, I really want it to feel special. Like this is a thing I've never written before, and it's a story I've never read before. And I also want the challenge of writing something that is maybe not hard for me, but that forces me to bring my best efforts to the table. That was part of it. The other part of it is the farther I got into the story and the more I realized that I was writing about a subject that many people were familiar with, and I'm asking my reader, you know, did Anastasia survive? Did she not? Did she not? I had to format this story in a way that I would make people who were familiar with the story begin to second guess everything they thought they knew about it. And I have two types of readers for this particular story. I have those that are very familiar with the Romanovs, who know the history, who've been personally interested in the subject for a long time, and they've done their research. That's one pocket of my readers. The other pocket are people that come to the story completely blind, and they have no idea, and they're just along for the ride. I had to make it surprising to both sets of readers. And so this structure was formatted specifically to make you wonder, oh, I thought I knew what happened, but do I really? Does she know something I don't know? And I wanted to make it fun.
Yeah. Well, you did that. I'm not a Russian history expert, but I did go to college and high school, and you did that successfully for me.
Right.
I was like, good. Hold on a second. And then a part of me wanted to go start Googling, and I was like, no, just enjoy the story. Now, I want to let you know that I had the book, and I also had the Audible.
Oh, that's fun.
And I was listening, and the two different accents were quite interesting, and it created a personality as well. I thought it was enjoyable. So Shoshana had asked, and I think you just answered it, but her question was, why did you decide to write about Anna Anderson after DNA was done, and that it was determined that there weren't any, when the remains were found? And I think you addressed that in the author notes, but I think you just addressed it.
Two things. When the remains were first found, there were five. there were two missing bodies. There was, and they knew in particular that the son, Alexei, sorry, I have something in my eye. They knew that the son, Alexei, was missing, and they knew that one of the daughters was missing. And because there were two that could not be found when the remains first came to light, that made the speculation explode. And all of the people who believed that Anastasia had survived went, "See, we told you." So that's part of it. And if you know, I won't spoil more of it for those who haven't read the book. There was sort of a stage in how the DNA came to light. The other reason is that I never actually meant to write this story. To be honest with you, I had a story about Alcatraz plotted out and ready to go. And I was going to begin on a following Monday. But that Friday, I was sort of wasting time on the internet and randomly came across this article about a woman found floating in a canal 2 years after the Romanov massacre. And I read how she was pulled from that canal and taken to a hospital, and they did an examination, and her body was riddled with these really horrible scars. And at the time, she wouldn't give her name. She would give no explanation for why she was in that canal. And they thought she was insane, as they used to do with many women. And they shipped her off to an asylum. And it was there 2 years later that she first claimed to be Anastasia. And I remember sitting there at my computer and all of the little hairs stood up on the back of my neck, which categorically has been what happens to me every single time I stumble upon the novel I'm supposed to write. And I remember sitting there looking at this going, what if? No one's told this story. No one has told this story this way from both of those perspectives. You have Anastasia leading to her doom, and then you have a woman many years later saying, it's me, I survived. And I loved the contrast. Right. So that is why I wanted to do that. But I still wasn't convinced. So later that afternoon, I sent a quick email off to my literary agent and I said, listen, I know I'm supposed to start Alcatraz on Monday. I know that. But this is what I just found. What if I did this? And what if I did this? And what if I did this? And what if I did these things with the story? I said, I need you to tell me to stop. I need you to tell me
and they didn't tell you to
back
stop.
To work on the thing that we all agreed that I would write next. And I expected her to go, Ariel, honey, get back to Alcatraz. But what she said instead was, I think we need to talk to your editor.
Oh, awesome.
And that made this snowball of a conversation in which everything changed on a dime. And you have to understand, I'd spent months researching Alcatraz. And suddenly here I was committed to the Russian Revolution and I knew nothing about it. I didn't know even the first place to start. And it began this wild ride of research and educating myself and then diving into a bit of history that I only had a basic understanding of. And it was the challenge that I needed and I loved every minute of it.
That's incredible. And that leads into a question that Karen sent me. And I think you answered it. Did you take a class in Russian history or did you have to start your research when the idea came to you?
I have never taken a class in Russian anything. I did what I have done with all of my novels, to be honest with you. My first novel was set in jazz era New York City amidst Tammany Hall and mobsters. I knew nothing about that before I began writing. And then I became a temporary expert on that. My second novel was set on board the last ill-fated flight of the Hindenburg. And I knew nothing about Zeppelins or German airships or that period leading up to World War II. And then I had to become an expert on it. And the same thing happened with the Romanovs. Once I'd committed to my idea, I began buying every research book that I could find. And this novel, to be honest with you, I ended up with 50 different research books. And it was this tidal wave of information. It was almost too much. So I had to limit what I was reading about to the actual moments that happened during the book. And then I was able to contain it more. But I consumed everything I could find. I consumed every biography, every memoir, letters, and I tried to build the world in which they existed, because it covers several continents in about 50 years of time. It was this huge undertaking, and it took over my life for several years.
That is absolutely amazing. So that answered to some other questions I had from Erica in Chicago. How did you research your book? You just answered that. Check. Good job. Did you discover anything in your research that surprised you, and did it change any aspect of the storyline?
Yes, so many things. Some of them were small and personal. There's one particular anecdote that hit the cutting room floor. With a novel of this size and complexity, there's no way to include everything. And I found myself going, oh, I'd love to include that, but I don't have room for it in the story. And there's this one story that I love, when the family was originally put under house arrest and locked in the palace outside St. Petersburg. The mother began burning letters. She and her husband had sent love letters back and forth to each other for years during their courtship. And they were, as love letters tend to be, very explicit. And she's burning them. She doesn't want the soldiers to find them. But she puts them in the fireplace in this mad rush, and they all go woof up the chimney and out into the courtyard where all of these soldiers are. And their daughters are standing there just laughing, A, that their parents wrote this stuff to each other, and then mortified that these soldiers are reading through the personal correspondence of their parents during their very romantic days. And I thought it made them so human. I thought it made them so normal. And the scene was 2 pages long, and it was one of those that we had to go, we can't include it. But there were other really fascinating things that I was able to include. One of them was how the daughters all sewed the jewels into their clothing. That's how they got them out of the country, or how they were planning to get them out of the country and during their escape. But what happened in effect is it created sort of bulletproof corsets in their clothing. So that night, that final night when they're all yanked out of bed, these girls threw on their clothes, then they're taken down to that basement. And things didn't go as planned. It was much harder for the soldiers to accomplish their work. But again, that was another reason why for so many years, so many people truly believed that Anastasia survived, because she did have some level of protection from that spray of bullets. And it was this never-ending stream of information where you go, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, or that is crazy. I write for a living and I couldn't even make something like that up.
Wow, that's remarkable. I have one more quick question before, drumroll, Melissa, Joyce, and everyone, we're going to have some fun. She has an introduction to make, as our tradition has held us through for several months. If your book was turned into a movie, who would you want to play Anastasia or Anna?
I have no idea.
Everybody put in comments who you think.
I'm no good at this part. I never have an idea board of faces. I know next to nothing about film. I think it'd be really fun to see translated to film. I do think it would be really hard. I'd be fascinated to see how someone could do the back and forth, sort of the reverse chronology of the story. I would be intrigued by that, but I have no idea. So I'm open to suggestions, absolutely.
How fantastic. People are saying the book was wonderful and kept the readers engaged. Everyone's saying you're a fabulous researcher. Bravo. Everybody's always saying they're excited, and this was fascinating. So since we are almost 15 minutes into our meeting, I was going to have you introduce someone who is waiting behind scenes, and I'll have you go ahead and start introducing her, and then I'll do ta-da. So it's kind of a surprise. Are we ready?
We are.
Introduced tonight.
Do you want me to do name or details first?
Details first, and then we'll splash.
Details first. Okay. So our guest author tonight is a friend of mine, not just a writing colleague, but a real life friend. That's one of the really fun things about this job, is that as time goes on, Your internet friends become your real life friends. We also have the distinction of sharing a literary agent, and we met in person, a number of years ago. She also writes historical mysteries, as I do. And one of my favorite things about her is that, like me, she is drawn to stories of extraordinary women doing extraordinary things. Some of her novels have been based on real events like mine. Others have been made up entirely. And with that, I give you my good friend, Greer McAllister, whose new novel is called The Arctic Fury.
The Arctic Fury, everybody. I think that we are all so excited to have you here tonight. Greer, welcome to my little virtual book club. And if you could just, was this recently like the number one selling book on Amazon or something fun like that? Welcome.
It was named a best book of the month, but it turns out there is more than one best book of the month, but all of us get to say we're the best book of the month the way that they do it. So it works out great. And thank you so much to Ariel for bringing me in and introducing me. This is really exciting and fun.
I'm so excited to have you. And I wanted to ask a couple more questions directly to each of the authors after we do some banter between the two of you. And I always love to have our currently featured author to ask our future featured author a question and vice versa. Perhaps before we jump into that, Greer, can you explain, do an elevator pitch about The Arctic Fury real quick?
Sure thing. And I love hearing Ariel talk about I Was Anastasia because it has such an unusual structure, and my book also has an unusual structure. So we both like to play with things and broaden our canvas and do that sort of story. But like Ariel said, it's a story of strong women in challenging circumstances. It's about a fictional all-female Arctic expedition that leaves Boston in the 1850s, going north looking for the Lost Franklin expedition, which actually was real. So my book follows the women north, and then it has a second timeline that takes place a year later when not all of the women have returned and the leader of the expedition is on trial for murder. So I got to go back and forth between this sort of adventure and a murder trial, which I had never gotten to do before. So that was sort of a fun new thing to do. And you get a chapter from, there's a main character, Virginia, but you get a chapter from each of the women on the expedition, in addition to going back and forth in time. So it was sort of a challenge that I set for myself. And it was one of those things that I was very glad when I told my editor I wanted to do it. She didn't laugh in my face, to her credit. She just said, if you're going to do that, here are a few rules that you might want to follow. And here are a few things that you might want to think about. So then it just sort of started pouring forth.
It sounds so exciting. I can't wait to read it. And I'll talk all the business logistics for the book club at the end of the meeting. But I wanted to have Greer ask Ariel a question about I Was Anastasia, or any question, but possibly about this one. What would you ask our author that's featured this evening?
I actually wanted to ask a question about one of her earlier books, and I know the answer, but this is a story that I like so much, I tell it, even though it's Ariel's story, because people ask me, like she said, some of my novels are based on real people, like Girl in Disguise is based on Kate Warren, the first female Pinkerton detective who really did live and do amazing things and saved Abraham Lincoln's life and had all of these amazing experiences. But people ask me, because I'm a historical fiction writer, oh, do you ever hear from the descendants of the people that you write about? And it just so sort of has turned out that the people that I have been inspired by haven't had any descendants. So I say, well, I don't have any stories about that. But my friend Ariel has a really good story about The Wife, the Maid, and the Mistress, which was her first book, and being contacted by the descendants of one of the characters/real life people in that story. So would you mind telling us?
I will. And remind me, actually, since this has been published, I have two more stories about being contacted. by people related to this. So I will give you both stories, two for the price of one. So my first novel, The Wife, the Maid, and the Mistress, is based on the true story of the disappearance of a New York State Supreme Court judge in 1930. His name was Joseph Crater. And on August 6th, 1930, he stepped into a cab and vanished. And his disappearance became the biggest missing persons case of the 21st century. It was everywhere for decades. And the story is told from the perspective of his wife, his maid, and his mistress, all of whom know what happened to him, and for very different reasons, choose not to tell. And it was this really, really fun story to write, in no small part because the judge's wife, for 39 years, went to this bar on the anniversary of his disappearance, this bar in Greenwich Village, and she would sit in this corner booth and she would order two shots of whiskey and she'd sit there by herself and she'd drink the first one and say to Joe, "Wherever you are." Then she'd put her glass down, get up and leave, and the other drink would remain there untouched. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's fascinating. Who does that for 39 years? So I write this story, and I was a little concerned because it was my first attempt at historical fiction, and I was completely new, and I thought, oh, well, you know, what will their kids and grandkids think of me? Turns out, as far as I could tell, all three women passed away without children, and I thought, okay, phew, I can do whatever I want. So I write this story. I have a great deal of fun with it. The book comes out, and 4 months later, my husband and I get home from dinner one night, and there's this email waiting for me. And I open it up, and it says, "Dear Mrs. Lawhon, I would love to know where you did the research for The Wife, the Maid, and the Mistress, because the mistress that you discuss was my grandmother." And I went, and I closed my computer, and I had this near total body failure because the mistress was a showgirl and she was, and then I thought, oh my gosh, I did those things to somebody's grandmother. You're going to sue me. Turns out in all of my research, this is not a spoiler for anybody who would want to read, but the mistress, the showgirl in the story, it has been listed as a missing person all these years as well. So I wrote an end to her story that I thought would be fitting, and I was very pleased with it. And as far as I knew, she'd disappeared right along with the judge. Well, turns out she hadn't. Turns out the real woman had left New York, gone on, rebuilt her life, changed her name, become a professional dancer. And on her deathbed, literally on her deathbed, as her family was gathered around her, said, "Oh, by the way, my name is not Diane. It's Sally Lou Ritz. Peace out." She dies. And the family's like, what just happened? So again, Googling Sally Lou Ritz, which leads them to Joseph Crater, which leads them to my book. And it became this really fascinating back and forth with this family that I didn't know existed. And they were looking to me for information on who was she really. I only had what anyone has, the available record, but they were able to fill me in on her life afterward and the decisions she made when she left New York. And it became this really fun, full circle moment for me and a realization that I'm not just writing about imaginary people. I'm writing about people that have children and grandchildren and descendants. And there are people out there who really care about them. And I do have a responsibility if I'm going to write about real people to tell the truth and to make sure that I honor those memories to the best of my ability.
Wow.
So it does happen, not often, but actually with every single one of my books now, I have been contacted by somebody who is either related or who knew my subjects in person with Anastasia. And you're going to have to forgive me. I've forgotten the name of the researcher because I'm a book and a half out from writing this. But again, the novel had been out maybe 6 months, and I wake up one morning and I have an email from a researcher at the University of Virginia. And she said, "Hi, Ariel, my name is so-and-so." Oh, forgive me for forgetting. "I read your novel, I was Anastasia. I loved it. She goes, I want you to know that I was the person that did the genetic research to determine whether or not Anna Anderson was really Anastasia Romanoff. She said, I will never forget walking out of my lab that first morning, having looked at the data and knowing that at that moment, I was the only person on earth who really knew. And I won't tell you what she said because it might spoil a book for anybody who has not read it.
How amazing.
I also later got another email from a woman who was a social worker and helped care for Anna Anderson in her later days. And it was really gratifying for her to say, you got her exactly right. That is exactly what she was like as an older woman. And those little moments have become the funnest parts of the job for me. It sort of closes the circle. The book goes out in the world and it impacts somebody personally and they come back to me and they tell me about it. And I feel like, oh, I did my job. I got it right. And that will never get old for me.
That's amazing. I have lots of comments. People are like, oh my gosh, that's life is wilder than the fiction. What an amazing story. They want to read it. Now, can you go right back and say the title of that book again?
It's called The Wife, the Maid, and the Mistress. Okay. Yes.
Fantastic.
And it's amazing.
Thank you very much. I am very fond of that book. So my question actually for Greer, I remember you telling me about this novel. I believe we were in Winston-Salem. Is that where we were?
That sounds right.
We were at a book event and we had dinner one evening and we got to talking and I think I'd mentioned my current obsession with Ernest Shackleton at the time. And you were like, oh my gosh, I'm obsessed with the Franklin Expedition. And I think you were still writing this novel at the time. And we, you know, swapped stories of the way we fall down these historical rabbit holes and then have to turn them from nothing, just an idea, into something that is a completed book. But it got me thinking, like I said earlier, we both write about women. And I'm curious to know what it is that draws you to these stories of extraordinary women. Some are based, obviously, on history. Mm-hmm. Some of yours you've made up as well. But what is it in you that goes, I want to tell not just history, but her story?
It's a great question. I think, I didn't set out on this path to say, I'm just going to write about strong women from history. Like, that's going to be my thing. I wrote The Magician's Lie. Whoop, The Magician's Lie right there. I wanted to write a story about a female magician who cuts men in half. So, you know, you see things all the time about male stage, you know, illusionists, you know, stage magic. But male magicians with the top hat and the beard and everything, cutting women in half. It's just a thing that magicians do. And I thought, well, why have I never heard anything about a woman on stage cutting a man in half? And I thought, well, maybe it's just me. I don't know that much about stage magic. I saw Ricky Jay once and that was about it. But when I started getting into the research, the first female illusionist who really made it her signature act to cut a man in half was in the 1980s. So my choice was right about the 1980s, which I went through it once. I don't really need to read the 1980s again. I could write a present day story about a stage magician, but that's very different, right? It's Penn and Teller, you know, fool, get fooled or fool you or things like that, or it's Vegas. And it really just isn't part of the culture the way that it was in the golden age of magic. And so I started writing The Magician's Lie and researching and figuring out, oh, it needs to take place sort of in the 1880s through the early 1900s. And that character, that Arden character, really spoke to me. I'm like, okay, she's fighting against institutions. She's pursuing her dreams. She's certain people and institutions are trying to hold her back. But she was sort of my first heroine in my historical fiction work. And the more I got into reading about women of the past, the more I've just blown away by women of the past. Because I think, particularly in the area I tend to write about, all of my work tends to fall into sort of 1850s to early 1900s America. So it could be East Coast, could be West Coast, could be anywhere in between. But in American history, I'm just constantly blown away by the number of women I find doing really interesting things. Mm-hmm. So we have the concept of, you know, the Victorian woman all buttoned up, and she's, you know, she, the ideal woman of the time is at home and nurturing and raising a family and doesn't have any ambition beyond that. Her ambition is to nurture the family. And that, sure, that was the majority. But not everybody fit that model. And the women who diverged from that model were doing amazing things. So as I was writing The Arctic Fury, or starting to work on it, like you said, there was the real life Franklin expedition. And so this is my research, just post-it notes all over the place about the real Franklin expedition, but it's a very male story. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how can I work this? You know, how can I be true to the women of the past, but sort of borrow some of this male story? And then I found Lady Jane Franklin, who was John Franklin's wife. He was the leader of that lost expedition. And she sent wave after wave of expeditions looking for him. She personally funded some of them. She got sort of crowdfunding, 1850s crowdfunding, to get sent for them. She advocated for the Royal Navy to send ships. She was a very, very active figure. And she herself had done things like ride a donkey into Nazareth and take a barge up the Nile, and, you know, in the 1840s and 1850s. And I kept finding these women. You know, this was the time where women were on the California Trail or the Oregon Trail, leaving their entire lives behind and crossing, you know, the entirety of the continent to make a new life in California or in Oregon. And so those women, you know, that pioneer spirit was very much alive. And so I sort of stitched together what I call my female supergroup of the types of women who were doing really interesting things at the time. And then I sent them all to the Arctic, which is a very, I really wanted to write about that environment, which is a deeply inhospitable environment that's basically trying to kill you like all the time, everywhere. Because putting people into that situation, especially these women who have been sort of on the fringes of society, they're sort of not, like I said, they're not meeting the majority ideal. So when you're in conditions that are that intense and that painful, like all you have is each other. You can't be worried about whether or not, you know, you're showing too much wrist, other than if you show too much wrist, your wrist will like get frostbite and fall off. But just being able to find those women, and I feel sort of like you said, you have a responsibility to treat the real people of the past with respect. Mm-hmm. I think that definitely holds true for me as well. That when I hear people say, "Oh, you know, you're imposing this modern view on women of the past," and that's something I work really hard not to do. But there always have been people, you know, maybe they lived in a really racist and sexist time, but not every single individual person of those times was racist or sexist, or we wouldn't have made progress as a society. Mm-hmm. So I like calling attention to how long it's been that people have been, you know, advocating for the right things. That's always been present. And then also to write inclusively, because we sometimes get a very whitewashed version of history. You know, if you think about Wyatt Earp and the OK Corral, the fact is that, you know, a quarter, I think this is a national, it's a Smithsonian number, maybe, that a quarter of all cowboys were African-American. Mm-hmm. And you don't see that in like the old movies and the old, you know, books and things like that. But we can do that in historical fiction. Like if we're writing about a certain time, we try to find out what that time was really like, as opposed to how that time has been depicted. So that's a very long answer to your question, Erica.
No, it's a great answer. I tell people all the time, because I get similar questions often. And I have always said that if you want to know what really happened in a moment of history, go find the account of a woman who lived through it. Mm-hmm. If she's still alive, that's fantastic. If not, find a diary, find letters, because women tend to be less concerned. Like my latest book is about World War II, and it's set in the midst of World War II. But women often tend to be less concerned with the bullets and bombs and more concerned with the small betrayals and the reality of what this war does to a family, does to a community, does to a life. And even though my character is out there in the midst of bullets and bombs, she is approaching it distinctly from a feminine point of view. And I think that is something that has been lost to history. In her particular case, because she was Australian and a woman, but in so many women's stories have been lost to history. And I love finding them, excavating them, and putting them on print. So hopefully they will not be lost.
That's fantastic. Both of you are so intriguing. I wish we could talk forever tonight. We have a couple more minutes. And I know that it's getting late there on the East Coast, you two. One question specifically that I had for each of you to answer is, what are you working now? What's in the pipeline, or what was recently published? Because I know that I Was Anastasia was a while back. What are you currently working on, Aria?
So I have a novel that came out a year ago. So I can answer it two ways. My most recent novel is called Codename Helene, and it is based on the story of a woman named Nancy Wake, who became the most wanted woman by the Gestapo during World War II, but also one of the most decorated women during the entire war. And her story is astonishing because not only was she a female spy, but she was a military leader, and she led thousands and thousands of French resistance fighters into battle against the Germans. And her story is phenomenal. And I believe Nancy Wake should be a household name. I think little girls should dress up for her as Halloween. That is my end goal with her story, that someone sends me a picture of their daughter in a Nancy Wake costume for Halloween one year. I love that one. Also, I am about halfway done with my new novel. It's tentatively titled The Frozen River, but it is based on the true story of a woman named Martha Ballard, who was a midwife in late 1700s Maine. And there are several fascinating things about her story. One of them is that she delivered over 1,000 babies during her 30-year career, and she never lost a mother in childbirth, which to me is astonishing because modern OBGYNs cannot boast that quite often. She was phenomenal. She was the aunt of Clara Barton, founder of the American Red Cross, and she was the great-grandmother of the first female physician in the United States. So the legacy that she left in the medical community is astonishing. But the reason I chose to write her story is because she kept a diary for 30 years during all of her time as a midwife. And in it, she records every birth, every death, every murder, every scandal, everything that happened in her small community during that time. And on the pages of that diary is a very fascinating event that is at the heart of the book. And I was able to find a copy of this diary at an out-of-print bookshop in Maine a number of years ago. So I am in the middle of it. It's sort of the stew before the book becomes a book, but it should be out in August of 2022.
Wonderful. Lots of comments about people wanting to read the World War II story and also wanting to read that one. So thank you for the advance tease on those. That's awesome. Greer, what are you working on now? Are you enjoying Washington, D.C. lifestyle and you're not writing?
A little of each. Okay. What I am writing, what I'm supposed to be writing, and all of that stuff. My next book is a bit of a departure. So after having done, four works of historical fiction, I got my first idea for something that wasn't historical fiction, and first idea in a long time. And I went to our agent and I said, I have this idea, this idea, and this idea. She said, well, what do you really want to write out of those? And I said, I want to write epic fantasy. So she said, go do that. She's great with that. So I have a series that starts with the first book in the series comes out in 2022. It's epic fantasy. The sort of shorthand that we use to refer to it is feminist Game of Thrones. So if you like epic fantasy, but there are certain things that you don't like about epic fantasy, like sexual violence and misogyny and that sort of stuff, we just sort of chucked that all to the side and wrote a story of powerful women. So if you like the powerful women in my historical fiction, you will love the powerful women of the five queendoms. So that the first book, I actually have copy edits on my desk right now. So I'm going to be burning the midnight oil on that for the next week or so. And I'm partway through writing the second book in the series. So that's sort of very new for me is writing in a series because everything that I've written before is standalone. But fantasy as opposed to historical fiction, it's not that you don't have to follow the rules. It's that you just have, you get to make up the rules and then you have to follow them. So it's a little easier in that way than being bound to like what technology was actually available in these, you know, specific periods. So it's kind of freeing, kind of fun.
It's just so inspiring. We have run out of time. I had one last question come across. We'll end with that. And then I will say, I just want to say ahead of time, thank you to you both for taking the time out to meet with my little book club. It's getting close to 300 members strong. I think we get a lot of members that watch post live sometimes to watch the full full show. I know that a few people that joined missed a question about how Ariel, you know, the question about how you determine the sequence. And I want to make sure that they go back and watch that at the beginning because we definitely talked about that. But the one question that somebody just asked me live, Ariel, did you ever write the book about Alcatraz or will you?
I will. I have all of my notes. I have not yet. It's one of those things that I have the whole thing. It's all right here. I just need an uninterrupted stretch of time to get to it. And sometimes in this job, I'm sure Greer, you know this as well, the question is not what's the next book, but what's the next best book? What's the right book to come after the one that I have just finished? So hopefully very, very soon I will get back to Alcatraz. I feel like I left those poor guys stranded there waiting for me. This is what always happens to me. I get an idea. I begin working on it. If I have to put it aside, I feel like I left them frozen in time. So I think they're starting to get a little aggravated with me and might be demanding my attention soon.
After the midwife.
Yes, after the midwife. She is definitely a priority. She is very much stranded without me.
One last question. Have the two of you met in person?
Yes.
Okay. That's wonderful. It's always fun. I feel like I'm talking with just two friends and it's real. That's what I love about the one author referring to the next author. Thank you so much, Ariel and Greer. I look forward to communicating with you about getting direct book orders or whatever is going to work out the best for individuals and for the membership. And then when we schedule your time, Ariel, don't be a stranger. Maybe Beaufort in 2022, if you're interested in that, come on down. And Greer, thank you again for being willing to participate in our book club. I'm going to say goodnight to the two of you. We'll wave and have a wonderful cup of hot tea and cozy up. And I look forward to, does she have her teacup right there? That's a beautiful teacup.
Even more.
And here's to warmer days and for times to get together in person and not always on a screen. Thank you for your time and good night, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Whoops. Thank you so much to everyone that joined us tonight and everyone that was live, Greer and Ariel, how fun was that? I had a lot of questions come across about when are we going to read such and such a book, and I just wanted to wrap up the meeting with what we're doing now and what we're going to do and how you can always find out about our features. So we just wrapped up our read in January was I Was Anastasia by Ariel Lawton, and we just had a wonderful evening with her. The current book that we're reading, everyone, if you can do it without having to stop and grab your tissues every couple of minutes like me, Cassandra King Conroy's memoir, Tell Me a Story About Her Life with Pat Conroy, the legendary author from the Lowcountry. Please let me know if anyone needs help on obtaining this book. We already did a direct order with the Pat Conroy Literary Center in Beaufort so that we could help support the nonprofit works there. So that, you've got to get on right away, you guys, because our meeting with Cassandra is March 8th, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, 3:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time and 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if anybody has any questions about that, you can go on my website. My travel website has luxlowcountrytravel.com has a tab that says virtual book club. All the features are there. So if you weren't able to do one of the bulk orders up front, you can click on that. I am an Amazon affiliate, but it's going to take hundreds and hundreds of thousands of clicks to even make a dollar. So I'm not trying to raise a lot of money through that. It's just to make it convenient for you. So put that on your calendar, and I will put it on the group that March 8th, literally a couple weeks from now, we're meeting with Cassandra King Conroy live at 5:30 Eastern time. And then in March, we're reading Catherine Wallace Hope's novel once again. If you remember, Jamie Poisson referred us to her. She's up in the Pacific Northwest. This book is based in Boulder, Colorado, right to the north of me. And I can't wait to read it. Now, we tried to coordinate an independent bookstore ordering of that book, and it's just been too challenging to do so with the small little bookstore. So what Catherine has offered to all of you is if you would like a free personalized or a free bookmark, all you need to do is go on the link that I put in the book club business and click on that, and we'll get it mailed directly to you. So does anybody else have any other questions about where we are and what we're doing and the next couple of months? I'm trying to see Jill's here. There's always the option of bringing you guys on camera, and I'm so thinking I want to do that some night, but I won't do it until I tell you in advance. Melissa said, thank you so much. Congratulations on your literary successes. That's to the authors. Jeannie said, thank you all. I always look forward to learning more about the authors behind the books. And Melissa said, love and hearts. All my friends down in Texas, I really hope that things improve for you. And I look forward to meeting with all of you again. If you have any questions, feel free to send me a direct message or an email. And I'm just going to close out tonight. Thanks for another wonderful, successful meeting. Goodbye, y'all.